WNST, Tassel Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm not used to having my logo as a bow tie in the logo. We're here at the Beaumont. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We are letting ourselves play. Am I holding my lottery mask up? Yeah, sometimes I hold it upside down. I'm not sure. We're going to crab cake it. We're going to have a chop out here in a beautiful Catonsville in the 21228. I'm celebrating my 30th anniversary. We're going to be at Costas next week in Dundalk. Don, you know, I gave you this day. I'm in your ville. I'm in the ville.
I'm still looking at the menu,
I
by
know,
the way.
And you're going to be at some point. We're going to let you eat. What's your favorite thing on the menu, Bob?
Well, I tell everybody, if you're caught, I just told the pastor, if you're coming to the Beaumont, you have to get the steak. I think it's one of the finest steaks I've ever eaten. But there's so much good stuff on here. It's a wonderful atmosphere.
I like the Brussels sprouts.
Come join us at the Beaumont. But go ahead, you were talking about giving me this.
So I gave you the whole. It's my anniversary show,
right? Happy anniversary.
So thank you very much.
30 years in Baltimore radio.
30 years on Monday, not till Monday. I still got to make it to Monday. But so I brought some friends. I brought Pete Carringi. He brought Brian Berrio. I have a surprise guest for you, Dundalk related.
Oh my goodness!
In the 4 o'clock hour. So we were going to do that, but then you took over the middle of the show, and you decided that you're going to do holidays, Main Street, Catonsville, all the important things for you. So go ahead.
I don't know if it's for me. And I said to you, and I said to David when we chatted, you know, we've had Reverend Al Hathaway on, legendary Baltimore City ministry. He's a good friend of the show. But we haven't spent a lot of time talking about faith and beliefs and what it means in 2021. And full disclosure, trying to save my soul up the street at Catonsville United Methodist Church. Full-time job is the lead pastor at Catonsville United Methodist, David Jacobson. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, I really appreciate the invitation. Don Nestor,
how long have you been here?
I lived in Catonsville for 15 years, I started pastoring at Catonsville United Methodist in 2019.
Okay, so is this where Jeff got married?
No, he actually got married at the Presbyterian Church.
I'm only asking because I went to a church here in Catonsville for his son's wedding, and I just wanted to see because I'm putting my mind together.
We have Presbyterians, we got Lutherans, we got Catholics, we got Baptists, we've got them all right here.
Yes, we do.
You might even have a Buddhist on the set.
It's an ecumenical community right here.
Well, it's the reason for the season, right? And I was raised Catholic. Our Lady of Fatima over in Highland, right by Pete Carringi. He was at Pompeii. I was at Fatima. The reason for the season, and he hates when I take Baltimore Positive in a left-hand turn direction from positivity, but I don't like how commercial Christmas has gotten. I like me some Mariah Carey and all, but I do think we've kind of veered off the course when we have people from the House of Representatives holding machine guns in front of Christmas trees.
Ooh.
It's a little weird. I think the media and you know, the money, the business of Christmas in America has certainly changed it from what my parents would recognize from the 40s or 50s.
Right. It's this unique thing. I don't think there's another holiday that I can think of that is a really big secular holiday that also overlaps with a Christian holy day. And so you do have this kind of these two Christmases that happen. And so, yeah, it seems like the commercial, you know, whenever there's money to be made, someone is going to, you know, try to make it.
That's how our country was built.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I would just say, It's good to talk about the reason for the season sometimes. But, you know, I'm all for the celebrations, Christmas trees, you know, all the types of music. But it is good to remember that, you know, there is a Christ in Christmas. So that's...
Well, I want to talk about that, David, because when I was thinking about today's shows, one of my thoughts was, I one of my very best friends in the world is a Methodist minister. He married me 9,000 years ago. You know, I've been very fond of a number of folks who have chosen that path over the years. I used to joke with my friend, this is your Super Bowl season. This is your March Madness. You know, Christmas and Easter. I mean, I always say there's always a little giddy up in a pastor's step around Christmas and Easter. For those who listen, we understand not everybody believes in the same things. And I have a lot of friends who chose another path, very spiritual, but down another level. But
I think most people in our audience have been in a church of some kind.
At some point,
right? Sure.
And I guess the question becomes, what is it about the Christmas story that you think is so central to Christianity?
Yeah, I mean, thanks so much for that question. at the heart of the story is really that, you know, God cares enough to actually come to us. You know, so often I think talking about popular views of Christmas, popular view of God is basically God is this you know, gray bearded man in the sky that, you know, just kind of set the world in motion and, you know, has just sees fine to just let it continue to roll. But the message of Christmas is that God actually cares enough to come himself in the person of Jesus. And you know, it's not the story that you would think, because, you know, if God is all powerful, you think God could just snap his fingers and poof, there's a man that comes. But no, he like chooses to come into the lives of, you know, Mary and Joseph, these relative nobodies from like backwater, you know, Israel. And yet through that, there's this incredible story that comes about the salvation that's available for all people. And so, you know, it's like, it's not the story that you would necessarily expect. And to me, that's part of what makes it so amazing, is that it's a surprising story. Even when you think you've heard it, when you kind of dig into it again, you're like, wow, this is not really what I would expect. And so Christmas is the time for me where I get to try to help people see what I see. And that's really my hope for, you know, you say like it's the Super Bowl for, you know, a pastor. And I was just thinking, you know, listening to your previous conversation, you know, about how when the team comes on the field, you know, that's the day where you hope as the coach that everyone is going to see the team that you see. Like they're going to be on the field what they've been for you in practice. And, you know, I think for me, I hope that people see the thing that I've been experiencing. They experience the God that I've been experiencing. So I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, I think it does. I think it's interesting. That's why I love the discussion. I think, David, I'll recall a conversation in a few minutes that I have with a good friend just hanging out over the waves in Ocean City one time about this next topic. And the topic is faith. And it seems to me that there aren't many aspects of Christianity that require more faith than the concept of a virgin birth in a little place called Bethlehem. I would imagine somewhere along the way, if it's a youth group or a questioning adult, somebody said to you, David, I want to believe, but man, this is a stretch, man.
Right.
What do you say to them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's so many different ways to come at it. You know, my background, I was an engineer for 10 years. And so
yeah, we're going to get into that. Yeah, the engineering student gets to the pulpit.
Where are you from originally?
So I grew up in Howard County.
Oh, okay. So you're local then. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Relatively. I still feel like, you know, I've been in Catonsville 15 years, but I feel like I'm still trying to become part of Catonsville. So it's kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, I think that, so I recognize that I look at this maybe a different way than a lot of people do, just because of my kind of engineering mindset. But for me, you know, let's say that you believe that there is a God. You know, you don't really know how that works, but, you know, if there is a God that created the universe, then really a virgin birth is not all that, you know, impressive of a feat. I mean, it's amazing for us because it's not our experience, but if there's a God who can, you know, reach in from the outside, you know, you talk about, you know, you think about the law of gravity. You know, if I have a ball and I drop the ball, we know the law of gravity says that ball is going to fall unless someone reaches in from the outside and takes hold of it. It's not breaking the law. It's just kind of circumventing it in a way. And so, you know, I would say for me, I actually start with the resurrection of Jesus, because I think it is extremely well historically attested. You know, people might be surprised to hear that, but I think there's a lot of great reasons to believe in the resurrection. If there's a good reason to believe in the resurrection, then there's a good reason to believe that there's a God. And if there's a good reason to believe that there's a God, then a virgin birth is not going to be a deal breaker for me. So I would say, you know, for some people, they just say, well, I'm not sure about that, and I'm going to move on with my faith. That's fine, and I'm fine with that. I would say a lot of my members are probably like that. But for me, like, I want to dig a little bit deeper than that.
How do you define, and Nestor, I don't know that we've ever talked about issues of faith. I want to go back to this conversation that took place.
Well, this could take a detour.
No, it's right on target with this, because it goes back about 2 years ago. I was with friends in Bethany Beach, and we were just sort of just enjoying the waves out beyond the breakers, and we were talking, and this good friend of mine is one of the finest people I know, and he's an atheist. He just, the religion thing just doesn't work for him, and at one point his question, and I'll paraphrase, something like, How do you make it work? And I summarized it, and I want you to talk about faith and what it means to you. I said, you know, I said, that's a great question. I said, I guess for me, and probably everyone's different, is probably I realize that there are a lot of things that if you're going to ask me, do they make sense in terms of logically, I'd have to say no, but that's where I get to this leap of faith that I'll call and say, but you know what? I've made a decision that for my life, the comfort in my life and the way that I feel about the world and the way that I feel about going, it's important for me to just say, I'm going to buy this story and it makes me feel good and it does help direct behavior.
What? I think an atheist would understand that. An atheist would say you have something that makes you feel good.
You made a choice.
Go with it.
You made a choice.
Go with
and
it.
And that gets to
in the same way that Hindus make choices or Muslims make choices or Jews make choices. For any religion, that's how I feel about religion. So we don't talk about it much, but I'm comforted in the fact that you're comforted. And there would be something to the fact that if I had a stronger belief that was fully vested in the same way that you believe in what you believe, that I may be more inclined in the same way that politically my feelings about Donald Trump are well documented. That won't change, right? But I believe that based on something, and it's okay if you believe the other thing.
Right.
I've learned to walk away from it because I'm rarely going to be in a room where everyone believes what I believe.
Well, faith by its nature, right, David? That's where I come back to you. Faith by its nature, I can't prove it. I mean, isn't that what faith is? I mean, I guess, what do you say to parishioners about what faith is?
So the way, you know, there are a few ways to characterize faith. You know, the way that a lot of atheists want to say, what they want to say about faith is that faith is belief in the absence of evidence. And I don't think that a single Christian I know actually believes that. From a Christian point of view, and that's the point of view that I can speak from, faith is a confident trust in something that you have good reason to believe is true. And so, you know, you might not be able to completely close the gap. You know, for example, any historical claim, you know, I can't go back and see it. There's always going to be, a bit of faith. The fact is that, you know, we have as much evidence for the person of Jesus as we do for Julius Caesar. You know, so it's...
The person, but that doesn't necessarily get into the miracles and the water and the wine and the other stuff, right?
Sure. You know, and so I guess I would just say that, again, for me, it goes back to if there is a God, then these things are not impossible.
So it all starts with you at that point.
I'd say it does. And I mean, but the way that I believe there is a God is actually through the resurrection. That's me personally. Other people will come to it differently. Like when I was, just starting to explore kind of the intellectual side of Christian belief, I didn't know there was this whole world of, you know, Christian philosophers and theologians and people, you know, like Francis Collins. I don't know if you know that. I mean, he's the director of the National Institute of Health. He was the director of the Human Genome Project. And so he's like this renowned scientist. And apparently when he was in medical school, he had this encounter with the patient. He didn't really have a belief system at the time. The patient had had like, I don't know if it was some chest pain and a really bad episode of chest pain. She comes through it and she says to him, you know, my faith really helped me through that. And she says, what do you believe, doctor? And Francis Collins says that he realized at that moment that he had never actually thought about it and that he had come to essentially a decision, there is no God, without actually ever examining the evidence. And he was supposed to be a scientist. And so I think that what I've discovered is that there is, you know, I think that a lot of people approach it the way you do, Don, and that's totally fine. You don't have to be a philosopher or a theologian to have faith. I mean, a lot of people find it gives them hope, it gives them comfort, and that doesn't mean it's untrue. But I think what I've found is that when you dig a little bit deeper, you actually find that the grounding is a lot more firm than you expect. It, you know, not if you go the cheap, you know, the Richard Dawkinses and the Christopher Hitchenses, but like the philosophy level, like, you know, the doctoral, like, you know, academic level, like, there's some really good stuff to talk about. Now, I know that's not the normal sports talk, or Baltimore positive type of thing. I just want, I'd love for people to know that, like, there is this intellectual side of Christian belief, and it's really pretty amazing.
Well, I think the thing I was trying to point out was, like, if I had a stronger conviction, I would say, I know I'm right, therefore, you must be wrong.
Right.
You must be wrong if I'm right, because there's one God, and it's my God, right?
Right.
I've had a harder time with that over the last 30 years, whether it's America's feelings toward Muslims after 9/11, which was hideous and still 20 years later hideous, the fact that people seek out religious aggression in murdering people in temples, in Sikh temples thinking they're Muslim, or in Pittsburgh temples because they know they're Jewish, or because they know they're black. Like, the hatred part of this sort of gets in front of it in the rest of the year. Now, Christmas time, there's kindness, goodwill toward men, the songs we sing, God rest ye merry, like all of that stuff. I have always subscribed that this is a kinder, gentler, there's a George Bush term for you, gentler time for our culture and our society, and that's a very important thing right now. You know, post-Trump, post-COVID, post all of that, where beliefs in facts have been changed, not in theology, not in spirit, not in religion. We're getting Orwellian in that way, that people that really do come back to God at Christmas or maybe only show up in your church twice a year. Right. I think it's an important time of the year, an important time in our lives right now, to embrace what my parents told me when I was 8 years old. It's Christmas. Be nice to each other. You know, it's a time to be kind and to share family and to share goodwill towards others.
Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, behind all of that is this hope. You know, boy, do we need hope right now for all the reasons that you mentioned. And I think that, you know, what you see, like we were watching last night, we were watching the 1994 Miracle on 34th Street, you know, just this Santa Claus story, you know, it's just this beautiful
story.
One
of my very favorites. Right? It's not the holidays until you've seen it.
Right. You know, and you know, it's not like a particularly Christian view of Christmas. It's a Santa Claus view. But there's still this notion of like hope, you know, and I think that that's the thing that we all need to find. And to me, like that central message of hope, it's at the center of the Christmas story. That, like, even though, you know, the people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. You go through the store and you might hear "Have a Holly Jolly Christmas," but you'll hear it right next to, like, you know, Frank Sinatra singing "Hark the Herald Angels Sing." It's like "Mild He Lays His Glory By," "No Born That Men No More May Die," you know, "Born to Raise Us From the Earth," "Born to Give Us Second Birth," and you're like, I don't know what that means, but it sounds kind of hopeful,
right?
And, like, you know, so I try to explain what those things mean.
No. You know, part of your role, not only explaining what those things mean, but I always think, and Catonsville itself is an extremely diverse, and when I say diverse, not only ethnically, but philosophically and politically, yours as being one of, Catonsville United Methodist, one of the biggest churches in the region, right? I mean, it was.
Certainly among the bigger United Methodist churches. We're no New Psalmist or anything that, but yeah.
among United Methodist Church. And it's an extremely diverse congregation. What are the challenges for a minister in managing that diversity? How much does that add a gray hair here and there?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, for as much diversity we have, is, you know, I think we could use more, because, you know, the church really is supposed to be all about diversity. And so that's actually, like, even as it's the challenge, and back in biblical times, you know, you read the scriptures, it's basically all about the challenges of living in a diverse Christian community. But that's the way that it's supposed to be, you know, and there's this image that scripture uses about, and it's, you know, picked up in lots of places, but, you know, body has many parts, and, you know, the hand shouldn't say the eye, I don't have any need of you. Like, so the challenge for me is just to always be redirecting people to recognize, like, you have a role in this body, and the miracle of the church is that it is this diverse body that somehow is able to operate together for a common mission. Like, and so...
Just like the planet should, right?
I would hope so, you know?
Yeah.
That's the goal, but, you know, I mean, Catonsville really is a diverse place. I've taken to walking around the community lately, trying to, like, literally just meet people. I even, like, mapped my congregation on Google Maps and just tried to be like, so where are we represented?
Right.
And so, like, I've started walking there just to, you know, find out. You've got a lot of, you know, a lot of immigrants from Pakistan and a lot of Hispanic folks that are in the community. And, you know, so I love to see, you know, greater diversity of nationalities continue to be represented, you know, to fully represent Catonsville.
Well, you
so
just hung out with another Latino.
Mucho gusto.
See, I was going to take my hair down for Pete. I figured he'd let me join the Italian soccer team, so I can be on the South American soccer team here if I want to.
Well, Nestor, we're talking to a guy who was going to be an engineer. Now, I had a bunch of buddies who, some of them finished ministerial school, some didn't. I don't know that any of them were engineers. How does an engineer become a minister? Yeah. Where is that moment?
Well, thanks. I mean, you know, for me, it was definitely a process. So I graduated from the University of Maryland College Park as a computer engineer. Thought that was, you know, that was it. You know, you hit a good career. I got married right out of college. I'm like, you know, this is it. You got the stable job and everything. And then, you know, bit by bit, people start saying things to you like, you know, David, you should really consider, you know, being a pastor. I said, no, I don't want that. Like, I know a lot, there are some people, a lot of my pastor friends, like I have some friends that, you know, when they were 8 years old, they said, Lord, I'll serve you my whole, and not me, you know. For me, it was, you know, God had to take, you know, drag me kicking and screaming practically. And until, you know, fast forward, I find out actually this is what I'm made for. Like, this really is the place that I'm going to be happiest because...
You're engineering something different.
Yeah, well, maybe that's... I think that it's like... I definitely bring that mindset. You know, the engineers in my congregation say, I like how you think, you know, because they see themselves in the way... I'm definitely very kind of methodical in the way that I speak, and at least when I prepare. But, you know, so for me, my story is just pretty simple. I actually started attending Gatonsville United Methodist Church when I moved here after college. And, you know, I got connected with the pastors, and just bit by bit, they kind of helped me see how, like, there was an opportunity here to really make a difference, and that, you know, God's calling out to all types of people to come and serve. And so, you know, for me, I loved my engineering job. It wasn't like, oh, forget this, I'm going to leave. Like, I loved it. I was, you know, leading a team of a few engineers doing really fun and interesting work. You know, sometimes I miss that, you know, the simplicity of the 9-to-5, you know, type on the computer, all that. But, you know, I think that bit by bit, it became clear. And then I left my job to go to seminary. Still wasn't really sure if it was the right thing to do or not. But to make a long story short, at some point, God just made it abundantly clear to me. I basically woke up a different person one day. I know, kind of a, like a radical conversion almost, to be like, wow, this is like God is real, and this is what I'm going to give my
and
life
this
to.
This is it, so, and it felt right.
Yeah. How many years ago was that?
Yeah, so that, I mean, the kind of conversion part. Yeah, I mean, honestly, 5 years ago, just over 5 years ago. So I was in seminary already.
So you were engineered for a long time.
I was engineer for 10 years. Yeah. So
that's an interesting story. Listen, before we let you get out, first of all, folks are listening, they're saying, that guy sounds pretty good. I might check that church out. Where do they find out more about Catonsville United Methodist?
Well, they can go to CatonsvilleUMC.org.
CatonsvilleUMC.org, and they can check it out. Yeah. Services on Sundays at what time for folks?
8:30 and 10:30 and 7 in the evening. But, you know, I would just say, you know, if you're connected to a church already, like, you know, or maybe gotten disconnected during COVID, because a lot of people have done that, please just, you know, a lot of churches are back, and we're just kind of in a rebuilding stage. So, you know, we'd love to have you at Catonsville United Methodist, but there might be a place for
someplace
else. You know, I don't think I've talked to a pastor in a long time. I mean, obviously, you know, Al Hathaway's been with us many times, but I've never really asked him about his congregation so much or his work. And, you know, being this, he leads people. For you in this thing that... And I keep thinking, like, middle of the night, Don has a tragedy in his family. You obviously like a priest, but, like, the counsel, when your phone goes off at 10 o'clock at night, like, when you say 9-to-5, mm-hmm. it's a different gig.
It's not 9-to-5.
It's a different gig. And, you know, maybe I've never really understood that part. He was my high school guidance counselor, by the way. So we're looking for guidance. You know, when bad stuff happens in my life, I don't have a pastor to reach to. I would reach to a friend.
Well, you do now, Nestor.
Well, I do now. But I would think if I were of the faith or certainly involved in your church, you are that last line of defense when things are going wrong during the holiday. You're taking on some heavy lifting. Probably nothing you're going to talk about, but people probably call you at all times of day and night.
Well, you know, I mean, it's honestly the greatest privilege of being a pastor. It's not easy on the body, and sometimes it's not easy on the family. But... you know, to be
like being
there,
a doctor, being on call.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And my wife is a physician, so we've got from that side too. But yeah, I mean, it's the greatest privilege. I mean, the toughest times that people go through, and they invite you into them. And so, and you have
I call Don.
Yeah, well, he's a good guy to call.
Well, before
sometimes
you,
I do too. So, you know,
before you run, we love to talk to people. We're doing holiday shows. We're going to have Megan Lynch on in a few minutes, talking about the great Catonsville Chamber of Commerce. We're going to ask her the same question. Holiday memories.
Can she get me parked? Just ask. No,
she'll get you parked.
Okay. Make sure.
Holiday memories. When you think, both as a little kid and now as an adult, what are some of your favorite holiday memories?
I mean, for me as a kid, certainly, you know, we would have the extended family gather at my grandma's house. To this day, if I ever smell roast lamb, I think of my grandma.
I was going to ask, ham or turkey? Yeah, it's lamb.
It's funny because
everybody does different stuff.
Well, most of my family can't handle the smell of lamb, but it takes me right back to grandma's house. And you know, I spent. You won't be surprised. I spent a lot of Christmas Eves in the church, even growing up. And often I was at three services. You know, you sing the choir, you play trumpet for the second one,
and
you light the candles for the third one. Right, exactly. So, you know, it's for me.
We never went to that when it was crowded.
Well, yeah. So hopefully it will be for a lot of folks, for a lot of churches again this year. But yeah, so I do have a lot of fond memories, and I think that, you know, a lot of people have those memories of coming into the church. You light the candles, you sing Silent Night, and like you see the wonder. I know it's cliche, but like, there really is like the wonder on the kids' eyes, you know, during Christmas, and you get to see that and participate in that. So,
how early do your little ones get you up now? When are they allowed to come get mom and dad?
Kids? Yeah, it's probably, I've got an 8-year-old boy and a 4-year-old girl.
Oh, he's so, putting bikes together, you know, Christmas Eve. Church is closed. We got to put the bikes together.
This is a powerhouse family. We should have mentioned. I want to let you brag about your wife a little bit, being on Baltimore's best docs, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
What kind of doc?
She's a family doctor at the University of Maryland. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So. We joke that we actually have the same job because people come to her and they want to talk about their spiritual problems. They come to me with their health issues. So it's like, what's going on here?
Well, it's a team package.
It is. You know,
well, thanks so much for taking a little time to talk about faith and Christianity and really bringing it home to people. Really enjoy it. Thanks, David. Really
now, everybody go back and just spend money and commercialize
it. Exactly.
Really nice to meet you.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks for
so
coming
much.
By. Yeah, appreciate really it. Appreciate all right. Don Moeller will be with us. We're going to be, let's see, we have Catonsville Commerce coming up here.
Megan Lynch.
Business in Catonsville.
Business.
We're here at the Beaumont doing the business of
back
the
to the menu.
Lottery. I got my. He's going to order. You're going to get the lamb chops now that you're in the mood for. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to be at Costas next Wednesday, celebrating 30 years, my 30th anniversary. We're here in Catonsville in the 21228. We're at the Beaumont, right down the street from El Guapo, right around the corner from State Fair, right next to Franco's and all of our friends out here in the 21228. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. There will be crab cakes. There will be chops. And I'm going to make sure he eats his vegetables. It'll be some Brussels sprouts for Don Moeller. I am Nestor. We're back for more in Catonsville right after this.